Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Janny.
Hey, and I'm Prez.
Hey, Prez. Game week 34. Well, it's not done yet. We've still got Forest Brentford to go, but there was over a million managers that free hit. You were one of them, and it felt like every player did hit. Did you have a big game week?
Oh, I scored the triple digits, 100. It was one of those weeks where, yeah, like you said, every single call that we took, well, not every single, I'll talk about a couple of disappointments, but you know, when you go into a game week and you think, yeah, this guy might do well, everybody did well. So I had one of the luckier weeks, and free hit in general has been great for everyone who was on that strategy. But if you weren't, look, it's a case of, you know, not every week everything goes out of the park, but this week it did. So it was a little bit unlucky for those not on a free hit.
Oh, don't mention it. I'm looking forward to today's pod, though, because we'll obviously review all those games. But yeah, I mean, I didn't own loads of the free hit popular template picks. So when I saw big returns from Cunha and Diaz and Sessegnon and Trippier, Sanchez and Sar, the keepers on big hauls, I was fairly disappointed. I did still get 8 Nori returns and triple Newcastle. I also had a Kepa clean sheet wipeout. He was on for 3 bonus, clean sheet, 10-pointer, down to 3 in the 95th minute. So disappointing weekend for me. I'm on wildcard, or I was last week. Bad week, bad season. But I'm delighted that you're having such a good season, Praz. Just tell us where you are. I know it's mid-game week still with one fixture to be played, but you're on an absolute elite rank at the moment, right?
I'm in 2.9K, I think. But yeah, I think the Thursday game is going to be key, right? Because a lot of people like yourself who are not on a free hit will have a couple of players. I think you have 3 or 4 players and I have 0. So there should be some kind of clawback in my rank. But yeah, very happy with where I am at the moment.
Yeah, but Praz, everyone that's got 4 players to play like me, they're not around you for rank. They're on 6-digit scores. They're in the hundreds of thousands if they've got 3 Brentford players like me. So I think you'll be all right. What's your target for the season, by the way? Do you look at it and go, I can get a top 1,000 or...
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it won't change the way I play. So if it's like, you know, if I say I have to catch up to the top 1,000 and what should I do? I'll still probably captain the guy I think will score the most points. I'm not going to go different for the sake of it. That's just the way I play and just hope to get lucky. So, you know, make sensible moves. I'm not going to take hits now in the next 3-4 weeks, hopefully, if I stay injury free. And that'll be just the way I go, and we'll see where I finish. My highest ever rank is actually around 4,000. So hopefully I beat that. Maybe that's a good target.
I love that, though, that you're such a patient manager that you can keep calm and carry on. Me, a couple of weeks back or a couple of months back, decided to go differential with everything, including my chip strategy. And if I'd stuck to my guns and just carried on playing patiently, I'd be sat now, I don't know, an all right rank. But I just threw caution to the wind and it's backfired. And my rank's gone red arrow, red arrow, red arrow. So yeah, I think I need to learn from this perhaps for next season, not be quite so maverick. But yeah, let's look at the big highlights from the weekend. Before we go to the Premier League games, Praz, we should just touch on the FA Cup games, because we saw 2 really good games and a surprise probably in the outcome. No one saw Palace winning 3-0, but also in the Man City game, De Bruyne was benched, which for me as an owner, slightly disappointed to see that.
Yeah, I think so. Both games, firstly, our FPL assets did well, as usual, right? In the cup games, European games, Ismail Assar comes up with a triple return. Guardiola finally gets a goal. They keep a clean sheet. So that's the first thing. Second thing, I think congrats to Crystal Palace. I think it was a fantastic win. You didn't see it coming, like you said. Like, okay, it was a 50-50 game in terms of the matchup, but the manner of the win, like Villa were completely outplayed. So congrats to them. And, you know, they will now play the final in the weekend of Game Week 37. Now, we will see where those fixtures move, but I think ultimately, you know, we don't foresee too many more turbulent fixture movements between now and the end of the season. But to your question on De Bruyne, I just think it was a case of game state. Like, I think, you know, he would have thought that if this game goes to 120 minutes, then I need De Bruyne for the final 50 minutes or the final 60 minutes. And so maybe the right thing was not to start him. But in the end, he didn't even need him. So he didn't even come on. So I don't see it particularly as a hugely worrying sign. I do think De Bruyne gets a lot of the Premier League games now to see out the season. So we'll see where it is. But you can never guarantee Pep. We've seen that for years now.
Yeah, an on-set piece watch. Marmoush took the corner that Gvardiol scored, assist there. And we saw Mateta saving his penalty miss for the FA Cup, which was nice. Palace have now missed their last 2 pens. We saw the Eze miss and now the Mateta miss. I wonder who will be on the next Palace pen. Do you reckon it goes back to Eze?
Well, I hope Sart takes it as a Sar owner. I think it'll be either of the two. It'll be game state dependent. Actually, you know what? A theme of this will be, and and when Jules Kelly and Sam Pod, a theme will be just how do we predict the future? Because now relegation spots are all done. The winners, so congratulations to Liverpool, they're now set. So it's going to be a little bit of what is the motivation for these teams? And maybe that's a theme for when we touch about some of these games.
Yeah, definitely teams to target now that have got nothing to play for or that are down already. But also teams to target maybe that are like Spurs, who have got distractions elsewhere. And if we start with Liverpool 5, Spurs 1, it always felt like Liverpool were going to score a hatful of goals. And that's why everyone on free hit pretty much doubled up on that Liverpool attack. And it was difficult calling the minutes of a Jota or a Gakpo, which is why so many went Luis Diaz. And Luis Diaz got the start. And when he scored that first goal early on, Diaz owners must have thought, here we go, might be on for 2 or 3 returns, but you'll still take the one, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, as you said, this game went entirely as people predicted. It was going to be a goal fest. It was going to be a party. Mo was definitely going to score. All of those things happened. And yes, you called it right. There was a big call on getting double Liverpool attack. A lot of people even avoided Trent because the Spurs goal even was a little bit expected, even though it was against the run of play a little bit, but you know, they did score. Spurs are usually good for a goal. So 5-1 scoreline was entirely predictable on the way it went. And of course, a lot of us were on Mo Cap as well. Thoughts on Mo for the rest of the season? He's just going to keep going, right?
Yeah, it was lovely to see, like, Slot made his 5 changes, lots of attacking subs. The one guy that you just know is going to get 90 still got the 90. And that was really encouraging just for the run-in to know that Salah is going to be there chasing all those individual targets, the goals, the assists. He's still going to be a go-to captain in the following weeks, I'm sure. I don't expect Liverpool to take the foot off the gas. I certainly don't expect Salah to take his foot off the gas. So definitely Mo is a strong hold and will still be a very strong captaincy option for the run-in despite the title being wrapped up.
Did you see the post-match quote from him where somebody asked him, you know, what does this mean for the rest of the season? How are you going to go? He brought up, as expected, his personal record that he's 1 assist and 1 goal to go to basically break his record for most goals and assists in a season. So it says it pushes me forward. He also alluded to the fact that Slot doesn't make him track back as much as Klopp. And so he's enjoying playing there in a more free attacking role. He's also saying that, you know, I can play longer. I can play 90 minutes because I don't have to do as much. I mean, of course, he does track back. He's a machine. But, you know, it's all relative. With Klopp, he was doing it even more. So he's getting less tired. So basically, I'm expecting 90-90-90-90 for the next 4 games for him.
Yeah, and this point in the season, we're used to seeing Liverpool maybe still in the FA Cup or in the Champions League final stages, and therefore Liverpool having all those midweek fixtures, which we're not having now. So players like Salah have got that extra sort of freshness in their legs. So even more reason just to be on him. And I saw when Trent crossed it for the assist and there was an own goal, Salah was there to tap it in. He was really annoyed that he didn't get the touch for that goal. And Trent did start. There was a bit of worry about Trent, but Bradley was injured. So I did see Slot, I think, did say he assumes Bradley will be back next week and it was just a knock. So if you're on Bradley, don't be too concerned. But that'll be an interesting dynamic for the run-in, the share of minutes between those two players. Mm. Do you look at them and think maybe an avoid for that reason?
I think so, to be honest. Like, Trent is expensive. And, you know, the one thing that does happen when you win the league is the concentration levels drop a little bit. So I think the clean sheet odds drop and maybe the goal share goes up. So yes, Trent will always be good for an attacking return. But for his price, you'd still think that people will prefer, you know, a Guardiola who has something to play for. So we will talk about motivations for these teams. I just think clean sheet odds go down. So I wouldn't bother with Trent or Bradley. For a free hit, it was fine. But I think going forward, I think it's an avoid, like you said.
We know the clean sheet odds drop. We can look at seasons gone by with Man City, can't we? How many games do Man City win in the run-in when the league title is wrapped up, but they concede a sloppy, pointless goal in a 4-1 win? Absolutely. We might see the same with Liverpool. I know you've been there with Edison time and again for the run-in.
Absolutely.
Good stuff. So target Spurs probably still. We maybe talk more about Man United, who also have that European distraction. And I'm sure Brian and Bermo is going to be on people's lips as a transfer in this week. Brentford obviously play Man United. But let's talk about some of the other teams that we target. And it's the obvious ones, right? It's the teams that are down already. And Leicester have been the team to target of late. And if you're on free hit, you went triple Wolves. And boy, were you rewarded. Big points all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, I was on the show last week and I mentioned that Leicester have only scored in 2 matches since game week 22. Well, this was now another game where they haven't scored. So this is now goalless in 10 of the last 11 Premier League games. And Leicester, good team, basically, to target clean sheets. So that's the first thing. And of course, they're leaky at the back. So I think at the moment, as a fixture, if you're home to Leicester, that's the best fixture on paper. Like Southampton are still okay. They keep scoring. Leicester don't. Ipswich always are good, and defensively they're not the worst. So I think, yeah, that's the best fixture. It just so happened that it was on a free hit. And also, not only did you double up on the defense, you also got a keeper's penalty save, which is obviously very lucky. But it was the Cunha show ultimately in attack.
Yeah, yeah. He's been... When he gets that first return, straight away you go, oh, he's just scored a goal. He will get three bonus points now. And then obviously he goes and gets more goal contributions. But when he returns a single goal or a single assist in any given game, 9 times out of 10, Cunha mops up the bonus because he's so creative and all his underlyings are brilliant. But even when you look at his points per match this season, he's now averaging more than Chris Wood. So, you know, Isak, 6.4 points per match. Haaland, 6.1. It's Cunha third, 6 points per match. And I was slightly worried on wildcard. And the reason I didn't pick Cunha was I knew he was a great pick for Leicester. And of course, he was in all any free hit draft I would have made. But for the wildcard, I just wondered, with the transfer speculation, is he going to start all the games, the final four games? And I just don't quite know if Pereira looks at it and goes, we've got to get used to life without him. Maybe the last game week 37 and 38, he comes out the team. But regardless, if you're going to go and get double digits, you bring him in and you sell him. So yeah, a bit of perhaps a bad move for me. I went Vissa instead for the better long-term hold. But Cunha's been amazing. And I'm so excited to see what price he is next season, what team he's at next season, and what position he's at. Because FPL price forwards, number nines as strikers, but wide forwards and creative forwards, number tens, are usually midfielders. In fact, they're always midfielders. And Cunha isn't a number nine. Cunha will probably be a midfielder next year, won't he?
I mean, depends on his role. Like, he could end up in a number 10 role at a club like Man United. Of course, I'm being hopeful here as a Man United fan. But it really depends where he plays. But it shouldn't matter his bonus potential, because for forwards, they get bonus for scoring goals. And midfielders get bonus for creating chances. He does both. So yeah. I don't think it'll change too much, apart from the fact that he'll get one extra point for a goal and a clean sheet. His bonus potential should still be great. Of course, different team, different role. We'll see how it pans out. Excited. He's been probably my best pick this season. Like, my game week 10 transfer of Haaland to Cunha and getting Salah back for, I forget who I sold, but that was, you know, that he outscored Haaland by about 50 points in that 8 weeks. So, you know, we talk about swings in this game. Cunha outscoring Haaland by 50 points between game week 10 and game week 18 was up there. And then on the free hit, I'm completely with you. I think he was a fantastic free hit pick. But if you weren't on it, you don't have to feel hard done, because minutes will be a concern going forward. You know, like Strand Larsen, let's talk about him. He has the most number of goals for under 6 million forwards. You know, we've had João Pedro being so popular, Ivan Ilsen, Welbeck, Raul Jimenez. Nobody's talked about Strand Larsen, who's now the number one on 13 goals. He doesn't even have pens compared to some of these other players. So he's having a great season as well. Perfect example of Vitor Pereira saying, this guy is going to be leading our line next season. Give him all the minutes. And if Cunha needs to miss a couple, then so be it. Now, we're not scaring people who own Cunha. But it's just a case of, you know, if you're buying him now, maybe it's not the best choice compared to some of the other strikers that'll be available.
Yeah, agreed. Perhaps not the best entry point. And Strand Larsen, you're right, like massively delivering. And do you know what? I know Wolves created loads against Leicester, and most teams do, but Wolves aren't the most creative team. So for Strand Larsen to pick up those sorts of returns in a team that don't produce a huge amount of output, fair play, because he doesn't have penalties like Raul Jimenez or João Pedro in the similar price band. So yeah, good move, and came with a big reputation, Strand Larsen, the young Norwegian there. Points for the Wolves defenders as well, though, like Jose Sarr penalty save. But it was Ait Nouri that I think really gets the headline, because he is a bit of a bonus beast, isn't he? Like, he was a lock on wildcard for me. Victor Pereira plays with wingbacks. We saw Gary O'Neill play with wingbacks quite a bit, sometimes a back four, sometimes a back five. But Ait Nouri is always high and wide and a real creative outlet for the team.
I mean, he's got the most attacking returns of all defenders. And that's, you know, 11 is no joke. Like, that's one every third game. And so absolutely amazing this year. And the best thing about Wolves is that, you know, as a free hit team or a team that you're picking, you know where the points are going. It's going to Cunha. It's going to Ait Nouri and maybe Strand Larsen. That's it. Of course, you got a Saar penalty save, which was you can't predict that. But those are the two picks, like Ait Nouri and Cunha. If you are ever on free hit or picking Wolves assets, people did that in game week 10. People did that on a free hit. And it works. Both these guys are great. And 11 attacking returns, like I said, is very, very impressive.
The Wolves fixtures moving forward, another reason why I was a bit hesitant not going on the triple up on wildcard, it's they play four teams who have all got something to play for. Like, they're all chasing something. So Man City, Brighton, Palace, Brentford up next. It's a tough stretch for a team that have nothing to play for. But sometimes, and we say these teams are on the beach, they've got nothing to play for. Sometimes that can be a good thing. Wolves are maybe going to play with a little bit more expression and freedom. So it's just one to monitor there. I'm really interested to see how they get on for the run-in, Wolves.
Yeah, I will put my neck in and say they're a little bit of an avoid if you're buying them. But yeah, they could do well. I mean, you can't rule it out.
Yeah, what did you make of the other relegated team, Ipswich, losing 3-0 to Newcastle? If we say Wolves versus Leicester was a predictable outcome, Newcastle-Ipswich felt like one as well. Home team, in form, playing a relegation team. It was pretty obvious Newcastle were going to get the 3 points. It was just perhaps a surprise. Isak only got the one.
Yeah, once Johnson got the second yellow, it was entirely written, you know, how this game is going to go. You know, a couple of goals or it ended up 3-0 in the end. Yeah, I think it was a functional performance, I would say, by Newcastle. You know, we saw some of the games when Newcastle was scoring 5 goals in game week 32 or 31, and you felt, you know, this could be even more. It felt functional a little bit, but Isak could have had more. And I think this has become a theme over the last few weeks. He started missing a couple of big chances. So he had 2 big chances created, one from Barnes, one from Murphy, also popular picks on free hit. And of course, he did put the penalty away. You know, I just think he's a good hygiene pick with a team with a lot to play for. Some people went Isak to Watkins earlier, or some people sold. So you don't have to buy necessarily because Newcastle's fixtures are not the best. But I just think Isak's a good pick, a bit like Salah, at a time where you may not have other premium picks in the market, like Saka's motivations we will talk about. You know, De Bruyne's just missed a semi-final. Haaland's still injured. So I just think Isak's a good hold, regardless of form.
Yeah, it's slim pickings for expensive forwards this season, especially. Like, gone are the years where we've had loads of forwards at around that 10 million price point who deliver. I'm thinking of Aguero and Rooney and Van Persie and Diego Costa. Like, this season, there was Haaland really high. And then you go down sort of just below 10 million to Isak and Watkins and then down again. So, yeah, Isak in that price category, he's just standalone and the best forward in the game at the moment. I can't see tough fixtures and go, you should sell him, even if we were to get double game weeks. I don't think I'd sell him for a double game week. He's been brilliant and he's the big chance hog in a good functioning attack. Interesting to see Murphy again picking up points. Thank you. Happy with that, the assist. But in the last 6 league games, he's come off before Harvey Barnes. That's slightly concerning, knowing Anthony Gordon is nearing a return to the starting 11. And when Gordon does return, I always expect Barnes to come out because, one, Gordon's better on the left-hand side and Barnes isn't great on the right, and neither's Gordon. Murphy is the right-hand side. But two, Murphy's played so well this season, but concerning to see him hooked so early and Barnes staying on the pitch.
Yes and no. So what I would say is Murphy has been the solution on the right. So if you remember early season, they started this experiment with Barnes on the left and Gordon on the right. It didn't work. Newcastle didn't have the best of starts, lost to Chelsea, lost to Brighton, lost to Fulham. And then game week 14 onwards, Murphy started on the right. He has since started every single game in the Premier League on the right. Now, the other thing with Murphy is he doesn't play over 75 minutes ever. Like, there's been, I can count 5 games where he's played, six games where he's played over 85 minutes. So he just doesn't play. He's always subbed up. Maybe it's a fitness thing. Maybe he likes to change things up, Eddie Howe on the right-hand side. And so what you're getting with Murphy, you know exactly before you buy, which is a guy who will be very involved, but play for about 65 to 75 minutes. And I think that's fine in a Newcastle attack, because the problem on the other hand is that Barnes is getting good attacking returns, getting good minutes, more than Murphy, but then he won't always start. Gordon will come back into the team. And there was a quote after the game where Eddie Howe said he's not 100% match fit. So he's now talking about match fitness, not just injury. And he's saying he's in training, we're still aware of his feelings in his knee. So look, if you're a Barnes owner, you could get pretty much all the games for the rest of the season because Gordon isn't ready, or suddenly one game you see the lineup and it's Gordon starting. And I'm still willing to say that if Gordon starts, it'll be for Barnes and not Murphy.
Yeah, I agree. I'm so in favour of that too. And it's why I went Murphy over Barnes on wildcard. They got Brighton next, Newcastle. And Brighton are giving teams chances. I think if you've got double Newcastle attack, you've got Isak plus one of the midfielders or even a Livramento, or a Trippier at the back, I think you see that Brighton fixture and still see goals. So don't be too put off by an away trip to Brighton. The way Newcastle are playing and the way Brighton are defending, I think you're good with your Newcastle attackers. And Trippier's a defender, Praz, but he played like an attacker in terms of his creative threat at the weekend. More assists for Trippier. Must have been lovely for free hitters, because he's probably not been a buy because of his price point, and because Livramento and Dan Burn have played so well at such cheap price points. But if you're on free hitting, you had the money. Trippier was such an obvious pick. The 1 week you had to go there, he goes and gets your, what was it, 15 points or 11 points?
A cool 15 points it was, Gianni. Yeah.
Wow.
Double assist, a clean sheet, 3 bonus. This was Trippier, vintage Trippier from 2 seasons ago. And I had him, and I have such great memories with Trippier. Like, I've captained him 2 times, and I rarely captain defenders. So when I was in a free hit, and this was actually 2 hours before deadline, I had Nick Pope and Cucurella as my 2 picks. And then I'm just thinking, you know what, how can I not own Trippier? This could be the last time I end up owning Trippier. And, you know, I'm picking Cucurella for attacking threat. Trippier has some as well. So I ended up going Trippier and Sanchez, which basically was plus 11 points on the deal on just the 2 picks, which on paper don't sound too different, right? Pope and Cucurella versus Sanchez and Trippier. Very happy I did that. We love defenders on set pieces, and he got a set piece goal from that corner, which the second assist which he had. And that's what Trippier is all about, basically chance creation through crosses, through set pieces. Obviously lucky to get 2 assists, any defender is in any game, but this was a perfect game. So thank you to him from all free hitters.
Yeah, and chance creation, if we look this season, Trippier top of the tree, well, with 8, Nouri and Porro all on 13. Southampton's Manning on 12, and then Dallo and Livramento on 9 each. You mentioned Cucurella there. He had a couple of chances. So Cucurella owners probably will feel like they could have had a goal. But yeah, huge swing there. But Chelsea did get the clean sheet. And Sanchez, many went Sanchez. He got the bonus points. The big story, though, in Chelsea-Everton was another Palmer blank. Now, everyone went there on free hit, probably as a bit of a safety blanket. They knew his ownership would be fairly high. They had money to spend. They loved the underlying numbers of the season gone by. His output has been brilliant in the first half of the season, but we have continually seen Palmer struggling in the last few months. He's a hard sell for me in FPL.
I don't know. I keep defending Palmer, and I had him on free hit, not because of ownership. I just thought that Everton matchup was good for him. But look, you know, Jackson wasn't in form. He scored. So Palmer could have done the same. Yeah. But to actually not have a single shot on goal for the first time since game week 4, I didn't see that coming. So I have to put my hand up. I was very pro Palmer. I continue to remain a little bit pro Palmer, only because I think the potential is there, right? I can also see the dip in form. I can also see the dip in confidence. But ultimately, you know, we just never can predict which game it turns around. So, look, I'm not going to say he's a buy. I'm not going to say, but I don't think he's a hard sell as such. But yes, the form is a little bit of a concern. It was actually Enzo and Madueke who were getting all the joy. Of course, Jackson scored the goal. But ultimately, you know, I saw Madueke probably as the best pick in terms of their attackers. He had 4 shots on target, which was basically the highest of all players. And Enzo is basically getting those XA, which we like, those chance creation numbers.
Hey, I've had Enzo in my FPL team for 2-3 months, and he has been so close to big returns, goals and assists. He has been Chelsea's chief creator for 2-3 months. Probably going to be Chelsea's player of the season. He's been amazing. And actually, his rise has coincided with the Palmer dip, and maybe that's part of the reason. But it was interesting seeing Madueke on the left. He looks really good on the left. And I saw him driving in from the left, getting shots off on his right foot, and thinking, why have we not seen him on the left much? He looks so natural there. And Pedro Neto is playing well on the right. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Madueke, because I always think there's a good FPL asset there because he's greedy. And we like greedy picks, especially when they're 6 million and they get 4 shots a game. So Madueke, one to keep an eye on, maybe not for the run in. Let's see. Fixtures aren't great, but certainly for next season, if he can stay fit. Yeah, Jackson, goal from distance. We've not seen that. 36 goals he scored at Villarreal and Chelsea, all inside the box. This was his first outside the box. So that was nice. I think it was a 0.08 XG shot that beat Pickford. But yeah, Chelsea at home, they do keep clean sheets. They can score. They just don't look like a Chelsea that are going to score 3+ goals a game. And for that reason, I'm wary on attackers in that team.
Yeah, it's fair enough. And I think you hit the nail on that. It's defense where they've shown the most improvement in the last, I would say, 10, 12 weeks. I mean, they're up there for defensive numbers. This is why a lot of free hitters went for a Cucurella or a Sanchez. Like, I was very happy with Sanchez. Two terrific saves in the game, by the way. Like, if he doesn't make those saves, nobody's getting any clean sheet points. So deservedly, he got the man of the match in the actual game by the commentators, but also got two bonus in the end. He wasn't on any bonus when the game finished, and then he kept creeping up with one or two things. So yeah, happy to get that as well.
Yeah, the best thing I think Maresca could have done for Sanchez was he dropped him. He bought him out of the team for a few weeks. And since his return, he's been amazing. So yeah, fair play, because he's had his stick, Sanchez. But he's an incredible shot stopper. It's just he needs to cut the mistakes out. And he's obviously not brilliant with his feet, which is a shame, knowing Maresca wants to play out from the back. But one to monitor. I don't know if Chelsea will go into the market this summer for a transfer. There's talk of it. Southampton 1, Fulham 2. Sessegnon was a popular option. So was Raul Jimenez. And if we talk about Palmer as the one player that blanked for free hitters, I think Raul Jimenez is probably the other. A lot went there, but they were a little bit unlucky. When you look at the underperformers of their XG from the weekend just gone, you see Garnacho, 0.87 XG. Vardy, 0.82. He missed a pen. Raul Jimenez is third on that list, 0.72 XG. When Raul Jimenez hits 0.72 XG, you expect a goal, don't you?
I think that's the one unlucky part about free hits, so no complaints. But yeah, when your striker plays all these minutes, I think he played the whole game, didn't get subbed off, and gets all these minutes against the Southampton team, attempts 7 shots on goal, then you expect something. But it's fine. I think that's how FPL works, right? Cunha probably ends up having a shot and a goal, and obviously created chances as well. But you knew what you were getting with Jimenez. You know, between Jimenez, when I was considering him on a free hit, it was between him and Welbeck or Evanilson or Chris Wood. Well, Evanilson got a red card. We'll talk about him. Welbeck didn't do much, and Wood has to play on Thursday. So no regrets going there. And I think he was a good pick. I think the story was Sessegnon, right? I mean, suddenly what happens, I mean, the story, let me just say it out for the listeners. The story, free hitters were picking him because he was playing on right wing. And a lot of people avoided him because they thought, you know, Harry Wilson is back. Could he get a start instead of Sessegnon? Well, he does get a start, but who else misses out? Robinson, because of either a minor injury or something else, but he was not in the matchday squad. So Sessegnon ends up playing left back, which, as an owner, is not great, but also is fine because maybe he would have missed out completely had Robinson been there, or maybe Wilson doesn't play. So we will never know the answer. But ultimately what happens is Sessegnon never plays beyond 60, 70 minutes, maybe 80 at best. He ends up playing 95 minutes. On the 93rd minute, he gets a header, gets the goal, which gets him 3 bonus. So that's a 9-point goal. Absolute scenes for free hitters.
Oh, and he concedes early to Southampton, which was not expected. So his clean sheet goes really early, and owners are like, oh, not only is he playing left back, he's conceded to Southampton. What a rubbish pick. Goes on, plays the 90, gets the winner, the 9-point goal. Wow. Huge for free hitters. It was just one of those weeks where so many players hit out of nowhere, but it was the right matchup, I guess. One game that free hitters avoided, Praz, it was really tough. Really tough to predict the outcome, I think, of Bournemouth-Man United. We knew Man United would probably go close to full strength, and they did. 1-1, Evan Nilsson red card changed the game, and that led to Man United dominance in the last 20 minutes. I was watching that game. My palms were sweaty. I needed something, and I had Kepa. And I'm thinking, I'm getting all these Kepa save points. I can see him creeping up in the bonus. He's now on for 3 bonus in the 95th minute, and a clean sheet, 10-pointer. Down to 3 off a late goal that went to VAR. And I was like, go on, be offside. It wasn't. So absolute pain for Kerkez owners, for Kepa owners. But then you look back at the game and you see Man United had 25 shots. They did deserve the goal. 1-1 was the fair result. But was the red card fair? Who knows? We'll see more about that in a week, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was tough, I think. Bournemouth completely on top in the first half, even I would argue in the first 60 minutes. But they did not create many chances. So Man United have now conceded 4 goals of 4 shots in their previous 3 games. So it's not like, you know, it was a bad defensive performance from Man United. It was pretty solid. But I think in attack, it was the same story. Created over 2 XG. But didn't do much until that 94th minute. I completely feel your pain with Kepa. It happened to me last week with Areola. Same, 10 points, came down to 3. But, you know, this is what it is. When 8 minutes flashed on the added time, I just knew that this is going to be one of those things. I was just surprised Bruno wasn't involved, because Bruno had another amazing game, actually ended up on two bonus without any attacking returns as usual. And it was, I think, a good dress rehearsal for the Europa League, because Man United actually went fairly strong.
Yeah, and they will rotate surely heavily next week, won't they? Which will matter in FPL, because they play Brentford, and a fair few alone Brentford players. But we've seen Amorim between the two games in Europe often play the kids. I think he's been quite vocal about doing that. So I think we expect big rotation for the Brentford fixture. But yeah, going into it, they were relatively full strength. And Bruno is the only player in the league so far this season to create 80-plus chances. If you put him in a well-functioning team, he's just such a good FPL asset. I'm really interested to see how United perform pre-season and maybe early next season, because Bruno's still going to have a fairly modest price, and he can outperform that price point very comfortably if he's got good players around him or players playing well around him. So let's see what happens with Man United if they buy a number nine, if they improve. I expect Bruno will be very popular next season at a similar price point to this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I think he needs a good clinical striker to put those chances away, because ultimately a lot of his, you know, chances created are gone to waste. So both Garnacho and Højlund haven't had the best season this year in terms of, you know, being clinical up front. Højlund did get his goal. But let's discuss Bournemouth, because Bournemouth are a popular team. A lot of people have Bournemouth picks. Of course, Ivanilson, we will see with the red card, right? I mean, it felt like, you know, I think Iraola said at the end of the game that they will appeal it, but he was not very confident about the appeal, because there was some suggestion that that could have been a slip. Now, we're not going to speculate on that. But without Ivanilson, do you actually jump on Otara? Because, you know, that was the theme last time when he was injured. Or do you just say, you know what, just avoid Bournemouth now for the end of the season?
Yeah, I mean, European football is still an option for them. Like, they will know if they win three of their four remaining games, they've got a chance of some European football, which they're playing for. But the fixtures are rough. It's Arsenal, Villa, Man City. That's a really tough run of three games. They do have Leicester on the final day, by the way, which could be one for a kind of final day punt on an Evan Ilson or a Semenyo. Leicester at home is a lovely fixture. I went Justin Cliver, so I'm hopeful he gets me something in these games. But yeah, down the middle without Evan Ilson, Cliver owners, Semenyo owners, it's not as productive, that attack, without Evan Ilson. But Dango down the middle, we did see last time, did get in and amongst the goals. But I still think you can hold on Bournemouth now till probably the final day. Leicester at home will be a nice one-week punt to end the season, especially if Bournemouth have something to play for 38.
Yep, fair shout. And that race for top eight, I mean, Fulham's eighth on 51 points, Brighton on 51 as well. Bournemouth's just behind them on 50, on 10th. So they definitely have something to play for. They are very keen on Europe. Even Brentford, Crystal Palace are not too far behind them, 5 points behind eighth as well. So I think between these five teams, when we talk about motivations and you know, there's a lot of picks here that may have the motivations. Now, Crystal Palace, you just never know. Maybe they start focusing on the FA Cup final. You know, like with Arsenal, they rested Mateta, you know, and Sarr. So you don't know what's happening there. But I think in the other four teams, I still expect them to go for it completely.
Out of that batch of teams, Praz, the ones you've just mentioned, who do you like the best in terms of where we should commit energy or transfers? Because for me, I think it's Brentford, because one, we know they've got great FPL assets in Mbeumo and Vissa, but the fixtures are really kind. So it's Man United next, when we know Man United will play a lot of kids. Then it's Ipswich, Fulham, Wolves.
Yep.
They've got good games, Brentford, haven't they?
Yep, definitely. I mean, look, I think the one thing is motivation. The second thing is actual fixtures to perform, being motivated. So I think Brentford tick both those boxes. Fulham have been a little bit gone flat. Like, I feel in the last few games, you know, early in the season, you could say Fulham are really good at home. Even away, they're giving a good performance. Now, they're doing fine, but it feels like they're getting over the results more recently than actually putting in great performances, which is strange because they should have all the motivation to qualify for Europe. They are eighth. And the other one is Brighton. You know, we talked about Brighton. We'll just discuss their game with West Ham as well. They keep conceding. This was the sixth game in a row where they've conceded two goals. So something's happened at the back. Obviously, Van Heek being out doesn't help. But it's a bit like top four or top five where nobody wants it. They're all sort of stumbling through, and we'll see where they end up.
Yeah, I mean, Brighton conceding two goals at home to West Ham. No one concedes two goals at home to Graham Potter's West Ham. So Brighton, yeah, that's really, really frail at the back for Brighton. And then it was a smash and grab to then win it. I feel like Brighton are a bit of an avoid, but fair play, they went and got three goals. But the race for top eight is there, and they've had a taste of European football, Brighton, and they'll believe they can get there again, and a mixed bag of fixtures. Brighton, for me, are just one of those teams where you never quite know where the points are going either. I know João Pedro has scored a lot of penalties this season, but again, like, it could be Matoma pops up with a goal. It could be Welbeck. It could be a Weldy from one of the midfielders. You just don't quite know where the points are going. West Ham, on the other hand, you know, no surprise to see Jarrod Bowen get two returns. If West Ham score, he's nearly always involved. That's how it feels, right?
Yeah, and West Ham, another strange team, because not a lot of motivation. But you would argue, I don't know if you caught Graham Potter's press conference. He was really annoyed after the game. Annoyed in a way where he was basically being short with his answers. And, you know, basically, I think he's still very, very motivated to finish the season strong. Why wouldn't he be, right? New manager has come back into management after a long time, and he wants West Ham to finish strong. So I think this one is a little bit counter to what we've been saying. Even though West Ham don't have much to play for, I think motivationally, Graham Potter will want a full performance. He'll want to see the team doing well at the end of the season. So I think Bowen's a good pick. Like, Bowen as well plays Spurs. So the same thing that we talked about with Brentford, obviously we are expecting a rotated Man United team in Game Week 35, similar to Spurs. They should have a rotated team as well. So for similar reasons, I think Bowen's a good pick. Kudus is also showing some goals. Finally, some attacking. He has shown attacking threat, but actually no attacking output, or not much anyway. So he's been doing as well. Fulcrook, if he comes back, he didn't start this game, but he's a decent shot. So I think there's a couple of picks from West Ham, but none better than Bowen.
Yeah, yeah. And Wan-Bissaka too, down that right-hand side. Like, since he's left Man United, he's become a really attacking fullback that Potter uses. So keep your eye on him. Perhaps we talk about targeting the teams that could get European football next season, but then there's obviously the teams that could get Champions League football as well, right? So we're still thinking, you know, Man City, Newcastle, Forest, Villa, Chelsea. Those guys, like, there's three spots up for grabs if we assume that Arsenal will get Champions League. There's then third, fourth, fifth. Yep. All got something to play for. They can't really take their foot off the gas. Teams like Man City still have to go full throttle, don't they?
They absolutely do. And you know, in a way, Aston Villa exiting the FA Cup means that their entire focus is on the league. They will get some minutes rest. So I think I'm bullish on their minutes and their picks as well. We'll see how Rashford's injury is. This is one other update from the weekend where Rashford seems to be out, and Emery said that you know, he could be out for weeks, so makes Watkins a pick. So Chelsea is the difficult one, right? We talked about Chelsea as a team that has motivation, but why then aren't we picking Cole Palmer? Because maybe the fixtures, because maybe the form. So I think these teams are interesting, and I think these are easy holds. If you hold players from Newcastle, from Man City, easy holds, even Villa. But Chelsea is a little bit more difficult. But I do think, yeah, these are the pockets where you will find goals and you'll find clean sheets because they have all to play for.
Yeah. Praz, everything you've touched this season, it's returning. It's turning to gold. I want to know your early thoughts for the game week ahead. Where are you looking at going with your transfer, but also captaincy this week feels so up in the air. I mean, I think I'd like Mbeumo versus Man United, but there'll be others that want to back a Salah or an Isak. Where are you looking?
It's going to be either Mbeumo, if I buy him, or I'm also keen on Man City, home to Wolves. So people will remember a few seasons back, a certain Kevin De Bruyne scoring four goals home to Wolves. Now, I don't think I'll captain De Bruyne, but Marmoush is a good pick as well, home to Wolves. So I think between those two, I'm interested. Who is not interested in Salah? So I think that's where we are. But remember, you know, Arsenal, Chelsea, Man United and Spurs are all in European action. So, you know, we should, as usual, wait on our transfers. And it's a Friday evening kickoff. And also remember that Brentford still have to play on a Thursday as well. The Brentford-Nottingham Forest game that we didn't talk about for obvious reasons. So once that happens, the Friday deadline, you know, we're all settled in and buckled up for Game Week 35.
Oh, I'm excited about that Thursday night game. I really need some Vissa and Mbeumo combinations there. Shame they're playing one of the best defences in the league at the City Ground. Well, look, Kelly, Jules and Sam, they'll be in the studio together this week for Game Week 35 for the FPL pod. And if you haven't already joined the mini league, the FPL pod mini league, that is, it's code Q7YCO0. Praz, as always, it was lovely to chat. Good luck for the rest of the season. I know you're going to have a worldy finish regardless of what happens now, but you can go get that huge, huge rank, I'm sure. So yeah, fingers crossed you continue this form and we'll be all copying your picks for the run-in.
Thank you, Gianni. Good luck to your wildcard. You know, the gains will really come after this week. So I really hope you can end the season on a high. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening, and see you next time.